What do you think of when you hear the number 13? Although there are many superstitions surrounding that number that have many people thinking it to be unlucky, that is not a universal belief. Hold on to that thought as I welcome you to episode 4 of Navigating the Energies of Life, a podcast that looks at how the energies of the Maya calendar are at work in the world and how they apply to daily lives. My name is Marguerite Paquin, and as mentioned earlier, I've been working with the Maya calendar for several decades and providing an online horoscope to highlight the days. This podcast is an accompaniment to that horoscope blog for the purpose of extending the information and providing an audio option for those who may prefer to listen rather than read. The emphasis for both is on connections between the energies of the Maya calendar and events going on in the world, and ways in which these energies relate to personal lives. In episode 1, I gave a brief overview of the cycle of 260 days that we're working with here, representing interconnections between 20 unique days in combination with 13 unique numerical powers to create a count of days called a Dzogchen. Each of the 260 days in the cycle is unique, and every person carries the energetic imprint of the forces that were in play at the time of their birth. Those energies greatly influence how people see and interact in the world. Both the blog and the podcast follow the Mesoamerican calendrical tradition of timekeeping involving tresinas, 13-day periods that represent particular energetic themes, for a total of 20 different tresina periods within a 260-day cycle. In episode 3, we were dealing with the final tresina within the last Dzogchen cycle, setting the stage for new beginnings. That cycle concluded with 13 Ahau, which was Wednesday, May 13th. So as we begin a new 260-day cycle with one Imish, that's I-M-I-X, pronounced Imish, on May 14th, we're looking at the general idea of birth, the opening up of a whole new realm of possibilities. Before we delve into this, let's just return for a moment to that question I just asked. What do you think of when you hear the number 13? Yes, many will think of it as unlucky, which may be something like a Dark Ages notion brought forward, but that's not a universal idea. And in many places, the opposite idea is true, where the number 13 is considered to be very lucky indeed, as it was associated with power, completion, and fulfillment. In Maya tradition, this also applies, as the number 13 is the signifier of completion and transformation and change. We can see that in the fact that every tresina has 13 days, with the strongest energy coming in on the 13th day, just as that cycle is reaching fulfillment. By extension, we can also look at larger cycles, since Maya calendrix is all about cycles within cycles and the ongoing cycles of time and fractals of energy. If we add a 0 to 13, we have 130 days, or half a Dzogchen cycle. If we add 2 zeros, we have 1300 days, which is 5 Dzogchen cycles. 13 times 4 gives us 52 days. 52 years gives us a calendar round, the return of the exact day plus month alignment of energies every 52 years, and on and on. The number 13 is key to all these kinds of permutations. This year, we're paralleling the exact energies that were in place in 1968 in combinations that have not been in place since then. And there are major implications, as we shall see. I'm drawing attention to this because as this new cycle begins, we're at an interesting point in time. Not only the parallel to 1968, but much more. It's now been 1,300 days, five Zolkin cycles, since late October 2016, just before the last U.S. presidential election. At that time, it seemed like the circus had just come to town in the U.S. and a clown had thrown his hat into the ring. Change was definitely in the works. There was quite a bit of attention being given to the Obamas. They had just held their last state dinner. In fact, on 13 Ahau, the very last day of the cycle at that time, that's 1,300 days ago as of this Wednesday, at the White House, President Obama hosted Love and Happiness, an Obama celebration, a celebration of Black music in the final concert of his presidency. Given everything that's happened since then, that seems like almost a fairy tale. Michelle in a gorgeous gold gown at the lavish state dinner, everyone singing and happy at the concert. And although there was a lot of weirdness going on during the presidential campaign sideshow playing out at that time, particularly in the debates, the polls were showing that things were looking good for Hillary Clinton. The U.S. was about to elect its first female president. But as much as there was merriment in the White House at that time, celebrating the conclusion of President Obama's 8 years as chief, there were also strange things afoot. First came a massive cyber attack involving the weaponization of internet-connected everyday devices that knocked out access to many of the top internet sites such as Amazon, Twitter, PayPal, and Netflix. It began just after 7 a.m. Eastern Time and took 11 hours to restore service. That was on the last day of the cycle. And then, halfway through this Emish Tresina, just after the new cycle began, FBI Director James Comey suddenly announced that he was reopening his investigation into Hillary Clinton's email server in light of, quote, new information found but not yet examined, unquote. A move that many claimed was likely in violation of the Hatch Act, which prohibits interference with an election. 9 days went by before he reported that there was nothing new or incriminating about the information. But in the meantime, this October surprise prompted the rabble-rousing Orange One to claim that she would be indicted, urging his followers to lock her up. Many saw Comey's actions as a mistake of historic proportions that ultimately changed the course of the election. And while this was playing out, Russian hackers were already targeting and tampering with voting systems in several different states. So that was 1,300 days ago, and the next presidential election is now looming, which will take place during this current 260-day cycle. We'll see how things shape up as we near November. But as we could see at that time, there are often major events of world significance that take place as a new Zolkin cycle begins and gives birth to something new. On one Emish, the first day of this Tresina in 2011, massive changes took place in Egypt as President Mubarak stepped down and handed over all presidential powers to the Egyptian armed forces. Two cycles later, in the summer of 2012, again on one Emish, the first day of the cycle, Syria was declared a civil war by the Red Cross. That was the first day of the fierce Battle of Damascus, termed Operation Damascus Volcano by the rebels, as the Free Syrian Army launched a 6-day military campaign close to the Capitol buildings. One of the city's principal thoroughfares was forced to close, and hundreds of families began fleeing the city. On the first day of this Dracaena in 2017, hundreds of thousands of protesters arrived in Istanbul on this day. At the end of a three-week, 280-mile march for justice from Ankara to Istanbul, many carrying placards that read, "Justice," to demonstrate against the government's crackdown on tens of thousands of workers who were arrested or suspended from jobs after the failed coup the previous year. The goal of the demonstration was the creation of an independent and fair judicial system in Turkey. The leader of the Republican People's Party referred to the march as a beginning, a rebirth for the country, a revolt against injustice, a new step, a new climate, a new history. The march was followed by a massive rally attended by 1.5 million disenchanted Turks towards the goal of forging alliances to eventually bring forth a constitution that would represent the people. It was all perfectly aligned with the Maya energies. At that same time, Iraq's armed forces declared the end of a bloody campaign that had lasted nearly 9 months, killed thousands, and displaced nearly 1 million, at the same time as a new ceasefire was declared in Syria, a fifth attempt at this. The last time a new beginning to this cycle came, in late last August, we saw the then 16-year-old Greta Thunberg arrive in New York after spending 14 days sailing across the Atlantic aboard a solar-powered, zero-carbon-producing yacht in order to attend UN climate summits. Thousands had tracked her progress across the Atlantic, and as she was nearing the Statue of Liberty in New York, she was met by a flotilla of 17 sailing boats, each with one of the UN's 17 Sustainable Development Goals written on their sails. It was the start of several months' worth of climate change activism that took her across the U.S. and into Canada, as she participated in climate change demonstrations and became a rallying point for millions of young people across the globe who were calling for greater governmental action in this regard. So these are just a few examples of this idea of the new cycle giving birth to new directions. As it happens, Greta is in the news again on this first day of this new Dracaena, as we see the music group Pearl Jam has just released a new animated video called Retrograde, where Greta appears as a fortune teller, peering into a crystal ball and seeing a series of climate change disasters unleashed on the planet, from rising seas engulfing New York City to the bushfires in Australia. So, energetically, what's going on here? As always, this first Dracaena of the new cycle begins with the moon goddess, aligned with the initiating energy of the number one and the power of birth, working in tandem with Imish, which is itself representative of the birth-oriented generative nucleus that is representative of the sort of cosmic ocean or source of everything. It was seen as the great abyss, so to speak, the source from which everything is derived. The Aztecs saw the patron of this time frame as a binary deity known to them as Ometeotl, a dualistic creator deity who is often shown as a male and female pair, sometimes referred to as the Lord and Lady of our sustenance. The ultimate progenitor, a great creator source that could produce anything. So, thus, from this perspective, we are again entering into a time frame where truly anything is possible. Often it seems that the larger picture comes more fully into view during this time frame, which may be hard to fathom at this moment when seen from our small isolation cells that seem to be getting smaller and smaller the longer the pandemic goes on. However, many pioneering cosmos-oriented events have occurred during this period, as when the astronomer Edwin Hubble announced during Nistracina in 1925 the existence of galaxies other than the Milky Way, which greatly expanded our awareness of the universe. In 1931, the first human ascent into the stratosphere took place during this period. This was accomplished by the Swiss physicist Auguste Piccard and his assistant Charles Giffer when they rose to an altitude of almost 52,000 feet over the course of 17 hours in a spherical gondola that Piccard had designed himself. I should mention that Piccard himself was born on an Amish day. 11 Amish, to be exact, not in this Tresina, but you can see the residence. 11 is a number associated with change and inspiration, and Amish, again, is birth. So all of this is really in keeping with his birth energy as well. Although the trip itself was relatively short, it was seen as a great achievement and a turning point in world history. The Maya date for this ascent was 6 Kimi, which could translate as death everywhere. Could have been a real disaster. But it also represents new foundations everywhere. A description of this event can be found on airspacemag.com, where they tell us that the scientific objectives of the mission were fairly mundane. The observation and measurement of cosmic rays to do with their nature and intensity and movements. But they also wanted to do chemical analysis of the air and record temperatures. They point out that the flight was also filled with a lot of drama and the danger of a science fiction story. I'll read just a small excerpt. The launch unfolded in scenes that looked as if they were cut from the movie The Woman in the Moon. The gondola, ever so carefully transported by a small railroad track from its hangar to the launch site. Huge floodlights illuminating the site deep into the night. Hundreds of workers and spectators crowding the field. The pilots returning home as heroes to great public acclaim. Their admirers clamoring to sign their initials to the capsule. Airspace Mag tells us that the spherical gondola was Piccard's unique invention, a prelude to the stratospheric gondolas to come, and even the Sputnik spacecraft many years hence. It was the first of many kinds, weighing 850 pounds, fully outfitted. It was a 7-foot diameter, airtight ball of welded aluminum and tin. Piccard provisioned it with pure oxygen dispensers and a recirculating system to cleanse the carbon dioxide. It was raised by a giant balloon, the largest to date, some 33 yards in diameter and holding 500,000 cubic feet of highly flammable hydrogen gas. When fully expanded, once its gases were warmed by the sun's rays, it rose at speeds of 20 miles per hour, pear-shaped at first, but eventually rounded. It was a perfect sphere, in Piccard's words, and a rival to the morning star Venus, still visible after daylight, which several observers even confused with his craft. I wouldn't be surprised if Star Trek's Captain Jean-Luc Picard was named after him. The article tells us that the flight nearly ended in disaster several times, as Picard had to fix a hole so the oxygen wouldn't leak out. A motor also failed, which meant that the gondola couldn't turn away from the heat of the sun, and internal temperatures reached up to 104 degrees Fahrenheit. This intense heat bent the rubber joints, allowing even more air to escape. Then, during the end of the flight, the descent valve rope broke, so Picard had to watch for the setting sun so that the cooler temperatures could allow the balloon to descend safely. Picard wrote in his notes that they suffered intensely through this effort. But the media was ecstatic. One reporter referred to it as the greatest distance from Earth ever attained by man, the first humans to reach the stratosphere and return alive. They had, quote, raised the roof off the world, unquote. Picard himself described it this way, quote, as we rose above the blue sky, we saw the world through it in a fairy tale like bluish haze of extraordinary beauty. The following year, Picard did it again with a 12-hour flight on Maya Day 13 Men, basically translating as Transformational Eagle, with the flight beautifully matching the energy of that day as he rose to an altitude of just over 10 miles, flying from Zurich to the coastline of Lake Garda in Italy. It was another world record. News reports around the world pictured Picard's Stratostat balloon as having risen dramatically beyond the very curvature of the Earth. As the article put it, Picard had become akin to Columbus, his balloon, the Santa Maria of the stratosphere. This was nothing less than humanity's ascent into the void of space, into the, quote, cold kingdom of mystery, unquote, from which we might survey the globe, explore cosmic rays, and test the very limits of human endurance. So this is a classic example of the opening up of a whole new realm of possibilities, and was of course a prelude to an astonishing set of achievements over the following 80 plus years. It was the final day of this time frame, in 1957, that kicked off the space race as we know it today, with the launch of the first Sputnik spacecraft. And it seems that sights are set on far distant reaches of space at this time, as this was the Tresina that saw the launch of the European Space Agency's Gaia probe in 2013. On a 5.5-year observational campaign to map this Milky Way galaxy. 6 cycles ago, in early February of 2016, came the historic announcement, during this Tresina, about the discovery of gravitational waves that cause distortions in space-time, as anticipated by Albert Einstein decades ago. This transformational new discovery was seen as the beginning of gravitational wave astronomy, opening the door to the detection of completely different kinds of information, and is now prompting inquiry into vast unexplored new frontiers. This also provides the reminder of a connection with another great mind who was born within this period, Sir Arthur Stanley Eddington, born on 5 Chikchan in 1882. A strong life force oriented day, very precision oriented with the number 5. Eddington was an English astronomer, physicist, and mathematician who did his greatest work in astrophysics, investigating the motion, internal structure, and evolution of stars. He was the first to propose the theory of relativity in the English language, something that Albert Einstein built upon. From 1906 to 1913, Eddington was the chief assistant at the Royal Observatory at Greenwich, where he gained practical experience in the use of astronomical instruments. Among other things, he investigated the distribution and motions of stars, and provided the first confirmation of Einstein's theory that gravity will bend the path of light, when it passes near a massive star. In his 1914 publication of Stellar Movements and the Structure of the Universe, he summarized his mathematically elegant investigations into the motions of stars in the Milky Way. He also delivered significant reports on the relativity theory of gravitation, 1918, and a great opus on the mathematical theory of relativity in 1923 that was considered by Einstein to be the finest presentation of the subject in any language. And now, of course, spaceflight is commonplace. A global pandemic is not stopping work on the International Space Station, and SpaceX continues its push into space with regular launches, not the least of which is the feeding of the Starlink broadband satellite network. Shortly after this Tresina begins, 60 more Starlink satellites are going to be sent aloft to add to that network. More satellites to clutter up space. In my blog, I included an image of the space debris situation that surrounds this planet, something we may not think about too much, but a problematic reality nonetheless, just like the issue of plastics clogging up the planet itself. Getting back to the traditional patron energies associated with this time frame, I mentioned that this was seen by the Aztecs as a dualistic creator type of force, suggestive of the generative dualities associated with the opening up of new realities. Just getting back to our current situation and the dilemmas currently taking place. Just as this Tresina gets underway, we are seeing a truly unfathomable situation at the moment, which has to do with the battle between science and politics in the U.S. Unfathomable, as this is taking place in the midst of a pandemic that is killing tens of thousands of people in the U.S. and hundreds of thousands around the world. On the opening day of this new cycle, Dr. Rick Bright, the whistleblower who was ousted from the position of Director of the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, a key federal office in charge of developing medical countermeasures, testified in front of mask-clad lawmakers concerning the lack of preparedness in the White House regarding the coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Bright has been warning that without a response based in science, the pandemic will get far worse and that the U.S. will face unprecedented illness and fatalities. He has been warning that without clear planning and implementation of the steps that he and other experts have outlined, 2020 will be the darkest winter in modern history. He was recently ousted because he voiced dissent to the widespread use of the anti-malaria drug that the disruptor-in-chief was touting with no scientific backing as a potential cure to the virus. This is a critical moment in time, as Politico pointed out on the first day of this new cycle, when they stated that Bright's testimony represented a critical moment in the virus crisis. He's the first federal health official to publicly criticize the Trump administration so harshly and in such detail, given his prominent position in the biomedical world. And so, a new cycle begins. And most, if not all of it, will be focusing on how to deal with this pandemic. We now know that there will be no easy fixes. We know that there are no fixed guidelines as to how anything is going to return to normal as we once knew it. We know that huge adjustments are going to have to be made on every level of society, in every part of the world. The way we interact with people, the way we get our food, the way we travel, the way we conduct business, almost any kind of business. The way we shop, the way we exercise, our involvement with sports and entertainment, our education systems, our healthcare systems, and on and on. And yet, life still goes on. Well, at least for some. Looking at the energies in play at this time and the events associated with them, we see such things as Endangered Species Day coming in on May 15th, this second day of the Trisena. I've included a couple of links to this in my blog, including Animal Planet's site that provides images of many of the species that are on that list. This is a day called Tu'ik, I-K, apostrophe, called pronounced Eek, called Eek, a dynamic energy associated with wind, breath, and spirit. And it does indeed stir the spirit to see that so many amazing creatures are under threat. Fabulous beings such as the Bengal tiger, the Asian elephant, the black rhino, the black spider monkey, the blue whale, the mountain gorilla, even orangutans and chimpanzees. But it's also amazing to hear of the work being done by people such as marine biologist Dr. Amanda Vincent, director of Project Seahorse, who just won the prestigious Indianapolis Zoological Society's prize of $250,000 for her work protecting seahorses. The influential prize recognizes conservationists who have made significant progress in saving a species or multiple species from extinction. And then there are people such as 27-year-old Dean Schneider, who has developed a sanctuary called the Hakuna Mipaka Oasis in South Africa to care for and protect many African species such as lions, giraffes, zebras, and even hyenas. On the first day of this new cycle, we are reminded that this was the energy in place when the impeachment process against President Nixon was formally initiated in 1974. It was also in place in December of 2018, when Trump's former fixer and personal counsel, Michael Cohen, was sentenced to 3 years in prison for various crimes associated with the 2016 presidential election. And now, currently under the influence of one image, on the first day came the announcement that the head of the World Trade Organization will step down a year earlier than planned at this critical moment for the global economy, with the world braced for what is being assessed as the worst turndown since the Great Depression. There's also a note in my blog about the second day being Nakba Day, catastrophe, the 72nd anniversary marking the expulsion of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from their homes when their land was expropriated by the Israeli government during the creation of Israel. Al Jazeera includes a video on their site that tells us about Faidal Island, about a three-hour drive outside of Cairo on Egypt's Nile Delta. The location of an isolated, forgotten village of about 5,000 people who are the descendants of several hundred Palestinians who fled from their homes in 1948 to escape the bombs. This is what Palestinians call Nakba, the catastrophe, the war that led to the founding of the State of Israel. The Palestinians fled quickly, leaving most of their possessions behind, and traveled hundreds of kilometers for nearly a month, crossing the Sinai Desert before reaching Egypt to build a new life there on the Nile Delta. In its documentary called Egypt's Faidal Island, a film by Ahmed Nasser, Al Jazeera profiles this forgotten community, tracing the tribe's history of uprooting and showing how it still adheres to its traditions and customs. At the time, many people expected to return to Palestine within a few months. But that, of course, didn't happen, and their descendants remain. Others fled to Gaza, where they're currently under siege, under Israeli blockade, a situation made even worse by the COVID-19 crisis and the sparse supplies available for medical care. There are so many places on this planet that are in such dire straits. So many places where people don't have homes to isolate in or devices to amuse themselves with. Just hard, cruel, relentless challenges to deal with every day. In 2018, the fifth day of this Trisena, that life force-oriented day I mentioned earlier, saw the start of the Great March of Return protest demonstrations near the Gaza Strip's eastern border that marked the 42nd anniversary of Land Day, the day when six unarmed Palestinians were killed by Israeli forces in 1976. It was a demonstration to call for the right of return for Palestinian refugees, and it kicked off a six-week sit-in demonstration leading up to the 70th anniversary of Nakba. On that day in 2018, at least 15 Palestinians were killed and more than 1,000 wounded, a number that rose dramatically over that six-week period. We can pray that there is no more conflict on this current anniversary, but again, just an enormously challenging situation. There is so much more that could be said about all these things, but as always, the days and brief descriptions of the energies are listed in my blog. One other key thing that should be reiterated here, however, is the fact that we are now going through the energies that were in place in late May and early June in 1968. Yes, that 1968. For those who are around who remember it, that 1968. That spring that brought the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The energies that are in place right now are exactly the same as were in place at that time. That time when the second great blow came. The assassination of Senator and prominent civil rights activist Robert F. Kennedy, just a few short weeks after the death of Martin. Bobby Kennedy was mortally wounded shortly after midnight during the California primary convention, just as the energy of Ten Oak was coming in. A fiery type of energy known as a burner day, thought of as a kind of upswitch point as the energies become more intense. Even as he lay mortally wounded, he was saying, "Is everybody okay?" When he was told that, yes, everybody's okay, he then repeated those words, "Everything's going to be okay." He died some 26 hours later. His body was returned to Manhattan, where it lay in repose at St. Patrick's Cathedral until the morning of June 8th. A high requiem mass was held at the cathedral, attended by members of the extended Kennedy family, President Lyndon B. Johnson and his wife, Lady Bird Johnson, and members of the Johnson cabinet. Ted, the only surviving Kennedy brother, said the following, "My brother need not be idealized or enlarged in death beyond what he was in life, to be remembered simply as a good and decent man who saw wrong and tried to right it, saw suffering and tried to heal it, saw war and tried to stop it. Those of us who loved him and to take him to rest today pray that what he was to us and what he wished for others will someday come to pass for all the world." As he said many times in many parts of this nation, to those he touched and who sought to touch him. Some men see things as they are and say, why? I dream things that never were and say, why not? The Requiem Mass concluded with the Battle Hymn of the Republic, sung by Andy Williams. Immediately following the Mass, Bobby Kennedy's body was transported by a special private train to Washington, D.C. Thousands of mourners lined the tracks and stations along the route to pay their respects as the train passed. That was the last day of this Trisina. Now, I don't want to leave you thinking that Ten Oak is not a good day. That particular day was certainly tragic. But this energy also brought forth the birth of Florence Nightingale, one of the world's most renowned nurses, and also J.K. Rowling with all her Harry Potter magic. As I said, it's a burner day, within an anything is possible time frame. Just about time to wrap things up here, so for anyone listening to this from somewhere other than my website, you can find my account of days horoscope either by going to whitepuppress.ca and clicking on horoscope blog, or going to mayacalendararts.com and clicking on horoscope blog. That site includes earlier podcasts, other information on Maya Calendrix, some posts that I've written on topics such as birth dates and energy cycling, and some jottings about things that I offer, such as coaching services and personalized artworks. For anyone who might like some assistance directly from me in terms of exploring how these energies may work within your own lives, there are a number of options outlined on that Maya Calendar Arts site. But there are many, many ways in which to work with these energies, so I've not included all possibilities there. Feel free, if you wish, to contact me if you have any questions. Contact information is in the websites, as well as information on subscribing to the horoscope blog, if you'd like to receive automatic updates every 13 days. I'll finish off with a small puzzle, hearkening back again to 1968, since we are indeed dealing with exactly the same energies. Number plus day, plus number, plus month, as were in place then. Just 2 days before the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., a movie called 2001, A Space Odyssey was released. It was the brainchild of the then 39-year-old writer, producer, director, Stanley Kubrick, who was born on the 11th day of this Imish timeframe. It was a strange, very futuristic kind of film, a kind of puzzle at the time, and it still is, but highly influential. In it, there was a strange black obelisk, and at the end of the film, a very strange image of a kind of star child, like a yet unborn baby, floating in a halo of light out there in space. There's been all sorts of speculation about what that was supposed to mean, both the obelisk and the baby. And since we're back here again in this birth-oriented time frame, going through this same energy field, so to speak, it might be something to contemplate again. It was one of the most enigmatic endings in the history of film. It may mean nothing. It may mean something. Just something to ponder. And one final note about the cosmos at this time. Space.com is reminding us that right now, after all that brilliance with Venus as the evening star, this planet is now just 6% illuminated. They tell us that Venus can still be located before sunset as seen from mid-northern latitudes. Now, 29 million miles from Earth, Venus is becoming more and more aligned between us and the Sun, and it, as such, is turning more and more of its dark side toward us. In another week, it will be all but gone from the evening sky. So this will be the last opportunity to see it before it rises again as the morning star. It will be near the end of May when we come back to see where we're going with the second tracina of the cycle. Until then, keep safe, be well. Love to you all.